Welcome to another podcast on Fire, bonus episode, this time on whatever you want. And as promised, we're here to do another bonus chat and put a pin in the massive Michael Wong All Wrong finale that covered three films officially and three films, including this one, unofficially. And those unofficial ones were placed here in the website exclusive bonus episode section of podcastonfire.com. If you follow us from the main coverage onto the website, listen to us. And if you're back listening to us again in this second bonus episode, thank you very much. That's an investment on your part, and we're grateful for it. We conclude with Michael Wong as the genie of the pearls in Wong Jing's Wacky Whatever You Want. And I'm Kenny B, with me is still not exhausted yet covering Michael Wong, but it is the last one, at least for a while.
I know, it's sad, isn't it? Yeah. Hi, it's Phil from Instant Film Fans. You know me by now. Why should I say my name? I just speak and you know who I am. Yay, I'm famous. It's a sad, sad day indeed. I mean, we're doing Michael Wong, and I think there's a lot of love out there for the Wong. Who is Wong? He's not Wong. You know, these extended bonuses we give to you with love. Because, you know, we've enjoyed doing this, and it's been a journey, one that, you know, has to end at some point. We're here to deliver the goods on the Wong.
And indeed, it seems like you can drum up some excitement discussing him and discussing his movies. So that's why I'm hoping, in the wake of the release of the knockoff episode, the main episode, that we've gotten some crazy amount of likes and retweets from Michael Wong Film Twitter. As I'm sure there is a massive hashtag for. Not Film Twitter by itself, Michael Wong Film Twitter.
Hashtag Michael Wong.
So I'm hoping you all liked it. Thank you everybody for being here. And let's get going. Whatever You Want from 1994 and plot from Hong Kong Movie Database. The character of Ko Xiaoping, played by Anita Yun, who she can barely keep a job, but she finds three magic pearls in an antique store that gives her three wishes via a barely clothed genie named Bolo Bolo, played by Michael Wong. What she really wants is to meet her long estranged conductor / advertisement director, different line of work. She wants to find her long estranged sister, called Pearl Ko, played by Christy Chung. They both end up chasing after the studly genie, who's perturbed about all this attention because, well, being a god in training, he doesn't have, in quotation, a dicky. That's a problem. There's nothing there. So, let's get into it. So, some minor background. Worth noting is that this was released on DVD as part of the Shaw Brothers library, which seems strange, but its production company, the movie, was Cosmopolitan Film Productions, which was co-founded by Shaw Brothers and TVB, and TVB was co-founded by Sir Ron Ron Shaw. So the productions that came out of the company, Cosmopolitan, headed by Mona Fong, movies like Justice My Foot, the Stephen Chow movie, Andy Lau in Casino Tycoon, Love on Delivery, again, a Stephen Chow movie, and this movie, Whatever You Want. They all ended up getting spiffy remasters on DVD as well, because Cosmopolitan's films reverted to the rights fold of Celestial, and therefore they were part of the Shaw Brothers line. They had stronger box office, though, via those productions, especially the Stephen Chow one. And even when headed by Wong Jing. But Whatever You Want grossed a pretty low 5 million when released at the end of 1994. This was a year dominated otherwise by the likes of God of Gambler's Return, which was a hit for Wong Jing, Drunken Master 2, From Beijing with Love, Stephen Chow's movie, and again, Love on Delivery with Stephen Chow, as well as Hail the Judge, which was another Wong Jing-directed hit with Stephen Chow. So obviously, he had a busy year. He had God of Gambler's Return, Hail the Judge, and so I think he was pretty satisfied when he was tallying up his sort of box office results over the year of 1994 or across the year of 1994. Obviously, though, the power of Michael Wong as a genie should have meant 100 billion squillion dollars, but we can't have everything.
Brilliant. 100 billion squillion dollars. I love it. Yeah.
It's a real number. So let's get into the film. I've already sort of stated my opinion previously, so I'll repeat some stuff and expand on some stuff. I think it's Wong Jing in good form, mixing the manic and movie parodies. he starts out making a dig at his own work, really. So he's got a sense of humor and then proceeds to put an actor we'll mention in a number of parodies, ranging from Chungking Express and Ashes of Time. So Wong Kar-wai is sort of in his sights for this one. And he also does little skits of a Chinese torture chamber story and Speed, the Keanu Reeves hit Speed. So if you focus on the oddity of Michael Wong as a bit of a crap genie, for me, the key to success here is energy and game performers that understand the aura of the film, and I think it's very amusing, sometimes very hilarious. And I think Jordan Chan in particular is the energizer bunny of this one, going from horny office worker to being transformed into the kindest man ever by the genie, something that has its drawbacks. So it's very funny, very amusing, and I like it a lot. So for your first viewing of whatever you want, the Genie movie, how did it fare?
My first viewing, and this is really interesting, wasn't a pleasant experience, and I really didn't get it. It was stop-start. I couldn't get into it. I wasn't feeling it at all. So, I don't really do it. I don't really put down movies, and I was prepared to come in and actually put this one down to a certain extent.
Meaning critically slam or literally
critically slating it, movie. And I don't do that. I mean, you know, folks, you know me, I am happy go, Charlie go, and you can.
You're allowed to.
Yeah, but I am allowed to. It's correct. I am allowed to. But you know what? I watched it again.
No, for the podcast. Twice.
So if you take my first one, yeah, absolutely. If I watched it again, I'm gonna actually say I enjoyed it, and it's, for some reason, some part of me wants to say no, but I did, and the other part of me says yes, you did enjoy it, because it is worth a repeat viewing, because there are things in there that you're not going to get the first time around. Also, you need to be in the mood for these kind of movies, and maybe the first time around I wasn't. Yeah, I know I'm an action man. I get that. I understand. I didn't expect there to be. That isn't the point. The point is, I think you need to be in a mood for a certain kind of movie, and I don't think I was the first time around, and it wouldn't have been fair. So in actual fact, and very rarely do I do this, I actually watched it a second time around. And I actually enjoyed it. Yes, I've said it again twice. I enjoyed it. I'm not quite sure whether I enjoyed Michael Wong as such, and if we were doing what we were before, actually, you'd probably be wrong. You're just wrong, but I know, Ken. I know you got a lot of love for this, but you're probably wrong. But I in agreement in respect of Jordan and Anita, and I appreciated their performances, and I appreciated what Wong Jing was doing with the movie on that second viewing.
Yeah, Wong Jing could be both on point comedy-wise, but he could also be grating and annoying and forced. And his insistence sometimes on current cultural jokes means movies have a shelf life of 10 minutes. It's a risk when you movie parodies might survive a little bit longer, but when you pull things that are current in news and entertainment, then it's a bit of a troublesome thing to make your movie survive. But his focus is movie parodies, as I'm sure we'll mention. But one thing you should say about Wong Jing, he knew the commercial game. He knew what the audience wanted, and sometimes that not so highbrow brew and mixture came together really well in the movies. God of Gamblers is a classic. Magic Crystal is a classic. It's really a Wong Jing and the action director's movie. You know what I mean? Like you can see where Wong Jing begins and stops, and when the action director takes over, and that is the magic of Magic Crystal. I think it's so much fun. And of course, he aided the career of Stephen Chow with Stephen Chow's God of Gamblers films, where he played the Saint of Gamblers, but he was in God of Gamblers 2 and 3. And Hail the Judge is my favorite, the Stephen Chow movie. Really, really like that. So he knew how to be there for the formula. He also knew, Phil, when it came to directing Stephen Chow, you kind of step away and let Stephen Chow be Stephen Chow, because they don't feel like Wong Jing movies to me through and through. It feels like, let the comedy genius earn the money for us by being the comedy genius that he is.
Yeah, and I think that this is where it comes from. Wong Jing is a Marmite in our world? Maybe you love him and hate him, or maybe you come to love him. I mean, his body of work is just so impressive. And you get it. If you get Wong Jing, you get this movie, and in that, and like I say, the parodies towards that, and like you say, some of it works, and some of it's got longevity, and some of it doesn't. But that's why it was worth a repeat viewing to to get that. And you know, if you're in the mood for a Wong Jing movie, and you need to be in the mood for it, and then it works. And that's what it does well.
And I guess the Michael Wong genie formula felt genius in the conception stage, all until the moment box office came in and disappointed everyone, because otherwise we would have had Bola Bola movies, 20 of them, I'm sure, if it had made a million squillion dollars.
I can handle one, but I don't think I can handle a series of them. But hey, you know, I'm sure you, Ken, would have lapped them up.
You know, eventually I would have gotten to all of them as they were like trickling in on like cheap VCDs. You know, like,
yeah.
Bola Bola 13 made in 1999. But speaking of Anita Yoon, I think as a dramatic actress, she's a slam dunk. Hopefully that restoration of her star breakthrough vehicle, C'est la vie, mon chéri, will see the light of day. It's been remastered for years, but it's been a little bit hidden away. But it's a classic melodrama, C'est la vie, mon chéri, with her, Lau Ching-wan, directed by Derek Yee. As a sort of spunky, peppy comedic presence, not as sure of a bet for me. It depends on the movie. In Thunderbolt, I think she doesn't find her place, and the Jackie Chan romance stuff involving Jackie and her doesn't work for me because, okay, apparently, after all that racing and killing, now we're in love, so yeah.
I think any romantic thing with Jackie Chan never works anyway, so I think you're on a hiding to nothing on that one anyway.
You usually has trouble finding its place. As I always say with Rumble in the Bronx, like him, I love Rumble in the Bronx, but him romancing Francois Yip doesn't make a lick of sense. It would have made more sense if they had paired up him with Anita.
Mm. Yeah, yeah,
it's good to be the leading creator and producer of your film. Like, I pick her.
Exactly. Yeah. That's it. Okay, then you can do whatever you want. Moving on.
She and even in God of Gamblers 3, the early stage, which is the prequel starring Leon Lai, her comedic part of the movie doesn't work for me either. So, but here it largely does because she's part of an ensemble that is cranking it up well. So she isn't tasked with leading it all comedically. And I guess the most specific note I want to mention first is, do you think it's a good thing that Wong Jing is able to make fun of himself? Because he clearly
does. 100%. You need to, don't you? I mean, you know, anybody would say, and somebody that's comedic or you need to first be able to take, you know, the mick out of yourself. So, you know, you can do it to others and others can take it out of you. And I think that's the good thing with Wong Jing, that he can do that. And that shows, and, you know, there's a level of immaturity sometimes within his films, which
And often directed towards people he doesn't
like. And people are turned off by that, I think, sometimes.
I mean, do you remember being turned off by how immature he was towards Jackie Chan in High Risk? Or was that sort of infectious despite it being so wrong at the same time?
Yeah, exactly. You know, there's a certain charm to it as well, and you embrace that, or you don't like saying that, and that's why I think it's a little bit like Marmite. You love him or hate him to a certain extent, but you need to embrace that. So, you know, I respect that. I enjoy that now. And again, you mature into his kind of films, and you feel them as you go forward, and you understand him as a director as well. So, you know, walking into this one was, there was always already an understanding of what you were going to get to a certain extent from the film before you actually view it.
And the specific bit where he does make fun of himself is when Anita Yoon speaks to us at the beginning of the film, because she loves movies, and she said that, "I watched 8 Wong Jing movies in one night, but that was possible since I fast-forwarded through most of them. I didn't miss much." He was the writer and director of this film, so that's the example of good, you're not precious. But as I said, he is clearly eyeing someone that he feels perhaps doesn't earn as much, shouldn't earn as much respect as he does. So let's try and take him down a notch, and let's try to be funny. Let's try and appeal to audiences. So he's going to pepper this movie with movie parodies. As I said, Speed is here. A Chinese torture chamber story is here. It's the sequence where she's tortured with the stapler and the photocopier. That's a riff on a Chinese torture chamber story that he produced. It's a violent and funny category 3 movie.
Two words you don't really hear on category 3, violent and funny. What?
To be fair, you do, because in Hong Kong cinema in the 90s, they played with the rating for the nudity's sake, for the graphic violence sake, but also they offset that with some waka waka humor. And that's what Wong Jing, the producer, was very good at, to push our buttons with horrible torture, like in that movie. And then some, hey, sex jokes, let's do some sex jokes. But the person he seems to eye in this one, that he doesn't either think... That is not very fond of, possibly, or simply thinks that critics are paying too much attention to him, is Wong Kar-wai. He does so by doing some movie parodies, all involving actor Law Ga-ying. First playing Bridget Lin out of Chungking Express, so he's in drag, and then later on doing a monologue about mooncakes. Is shot in the style of Ashes of Time. So Law Ga-ying is at that point doing a monologue as Tony Leung Chiu-wai. And you have to obviously know these references. I think most people do. It's Wong Kar-wai. And then you have to sort of think to yourself, well, what is he saying here? Well, I think for me, because I don't get it, I'm dumb, and I don't get art. And most of Wong Kar-wai's movies, they simply don't appeal to me. It doesn't speak to me. It doesn't affect me emotionally. That includes Chungking Express. It doesn't include Ashes of Time. I think it's his best movie. But I think it's funny that you poke fun at art here. In the movie, him, the Wong Kar-wai of the movie, is watching his film with an audience, and they're questioning, what does that even mean? Well, what are you even talking about? And It doesn't speak to us. So for me, I thought that was very funny, because there is a semblance of truth in there. Maybe not in Wong Kar-wai's movies, to be fair, but in movies of this kind, that if you just stage it a certain way and you speak to the side of how things affect you, like mooncakes, then you're on your way to making art and being pretentious and accepted in some circles. I think Wong Jing is mixing and matching, being very immature and very funny, to be honest, and saying something about movies he doesn't prefer, personally. But that was what I took away from it. Those a couple of Wong Kar-wai parodies. Did you spot them, take anything away from them?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, anybody that has seen cinema would see them, and you get that. And like, so he's making Sam, he's just poking fun, like he pokes fun at, you know, many a genre. And yeah, it was just his opinion on it. Like other people, as you say, you know, artistically, in certain circles, it's looked upon as that. And other people see it as just, you know, mumbo jumbo, maybe, perhaps. But, you know, it's funny in that respect, because he's poking fun at what he's largely considered to be films of a certain standard, etc., or lauded upon, and he just takes them and, you know, like you say, just makes a joke out of them, which is great, and you get the reference straight away, which is brilliant. So yeah, I saw them, enjoyed them. Yeah,
the TV appearances by Law Ga-ying, those were the only things I didn't spot what they were parodying, because I am not familiar with vintage Hong Kong TV.
No.
So it's fun that they get Law Ga-ying in a variety of roles here, and he's very funny. I think him as Tony Leung Chiu-wai in Ashes of Time, and that particular cinematography and style that they obviously ape, is good fun. We'll get to Michael, but I wanted to talk a little bit about the fact that I like this movie, but in terms of structure, there's not a whole lot here. It's 90 efficient minutes, don't get me wrong, but it has a very bare bonus structure. Then they stack a couple of gags on top of that, in between that, so that the movie sort of has a forward momentum, but it isn't always on the sort of on the ball and talking of structure all the time, because the genie arrives and the sister arrives and falling in love with the genie, but the sister falling in love with the genie, and there's some gags about that. What are we gonna do? What's gonna happen to him? What's gonna happen to the wishes? So it could have been dangerously close to being so minimum script wise, but I think he squeezes enough in there, enough structure in there for us to realize that he's doing his script, but he's also stacking his gags and trying to please us as much as possible. And I think it squeezes into acceptable territory based on that. So I was never bored with it, but it's interesting to talk to you that you had the experience you had. But what was the experience the second time? Did you feel it flow? It had a good pace?
Yeah, I mean, it was exactly that. I think it's flimsy at best, the story. And that's, for me, certainly didn't hold my attention the first time around, because you have to go in with a certain mindset, which is a strange thing to say, is it? Because sometimes you just want to put on a movie, and that's what I did. I just put on a movie and watch it, and I don't go in with a certain mindset. And this one you do, because if not, if you're going in thinking, well, I'm going to follow this plot or this story, you very, very quickly, you're going to go, no. And that's what happened. It was like, no, stop, start, stop, start. And then you just don't get the flow of the film. So it's flimsy at best. Second time around, I knew what I was expecting and went into it. And then it was different because I was ready for that. And it is, like you say, kind of staged from one comedic episode to another to a certain extent. And that's what drives it rather than the story. You're not gonna get that from this film. So yeah, it was absolutely that for me. But it works from when you look at it from those comedic kind of set pieces that you have for the film, and you view it that way, you're gonna get a better experience.
In today's Me Too world, do you think Jordan Chan's character, as he is initially, would have survived today's Me Too world?
Probably not, no. Nor would his character that he turned into. But he's great, Jordan Chan. Isn't he great in this film? And, you know, when you watch it again, you know, again, he's one of those people like, I wouldn't have, and we've touched on Jordan on a few episodes and different, you know, kind of the background of this and that and stuff. And he's such a great character actor that I need to say that I just don't probably recognize and appreciate. And yet, you know, he's cropping up in quite a few films, and we're always mentioning Jordan how great he is, and deserves, again, plaudits for this one. Maybe he, I think, possibly steals the show.
Oh, he does steal the show, because that's the thing. He takes it and runs with it. We have some specifics on what he does in the second half. But the specific parts where this character is so 90s pre-Me Too is that he, at the copyright commercial agency, he's a character that introduces himself to Anita Yun, the new worker, and in the background with his workmates, I guess, they have guessed her breast size, and that's what he comes up to her to announce to her that this is the game we're playing. But I'm always taken with Jordan's energy, regardless of the film. I have many bad things to say about Young and Dangerous, the series. It's not even... as such, it's up and down, mostly down. He has always been exemplary. He brings an energy to that character. Chicken is a womanizer and sort of a wild child, but he is very good at grasping the energy and essence of that character, and always have an infectious energy on screen. And he didn't mind being busy. I was doing a review of a 1996 movie just this week called War of the Underworld, which is clearly a movie made to capitalize on the current Young and Dangerous trend. Young and Dangerous had three movies come out in 1996, right? Jordan Chan is in War of the Underworld, which is a movie set in a world where Young and Dangerous 3 is playing in the theaters, right? So and then same year, he did Big Bullet, Benny Chan's classic action movie. He's in God of Gamblers 3, the early stage, in a demanding action role, and he's great in that. So I've always had huge admiration for him. Not a one-trick pony in any shape or form. And he's still at it. I mean, it's old now. But I think the latest movie I saw him in was... I think it was in the Anthony Wong Ip Man movie, to a certain degree. Ip Man, The Final Fight. I seem to remember him from that. And still, you know, as appealing as he ever was. And I remember he had a great little bit in Johnny Toe's Throwdown, so he was part of that quirky nature of Throwdown. So yeah. But then he arrives. Virginia arrives, and as the review said, he's barely clothed. He's got a lovely wig on, and there he is, Michael Wong in his prime as the genie. It's a comedy role. What was happening during viewing one and viewing two when it came to judging Michael Wong's role here?
It's just anybody could have played that character. Michael Wong, I didn't feel him. There's some moments with Michael, but he just looks like he stepped out the set of John was hard targeting Van Damme's haircut, and I kept thinking of that all the way through. So he'd lost me as soon as the door was opened by Anita when we saw him. So
that's an odd aspect to get lost by. Like I'm out of it. It's Jean-Claude. I'm looking at Jean-Claude.
Yeah, Jean-Claude, my name. Surely he's just walked off hard target and he's stolen his wig. And I couldn't get over that. And that was it then. It was like, yeah, it was a means to an end. It didn't really bother me too much second time, man. It was just he was there for, I was too busy concentrating on Anita and Jordan to care what Michael was doing. To be honest, he was like, well, that's just the way it is. Anybody could have played that way. He didn't bring anything to me. I know it's a journey, it's supposed to be the character and stuff, but it didn't drive me to watch the film in any way because Michael was in it. In fact, it probably turned me off to a certain extent, which I haven't said about many Michael Wong appearances, but yeah, it didn't really do much for me. It was strangely bizarre, especially the first time around watching it. I knew what I was in for from that point of view, but again, I enjoyed it second time around, but Michael's performance again didn't do anything for me the second time around either. So yeah, there was nothing there to cling on to apart from a couple of nice touches here and there throughout the movie that he did. But yeah, again, I mean,
granted, in that trio, he is the weakest one, but I think he's very enjoyable. I think it's very game to be sort of wide-eyed and silly. I also like that the genie is very courteous and very positive and sort of infectious. That I'm here and this is what I do. And I love it that he faints after granting a wish. So it's some neat physical acting, if you will.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. For me, it was like, well, yeah, anybody could have done that role and just done that. He didn't bring a Michael Wong-ness to it. Can we have that? A Michael Wong-ness? We have. There you go. It is in there. He didn't bring the Michael Wong-ness to it that I expect from Michael Wong. So anybody could have done it. I mean, it was what it was. I can understand your enjoyment of it, but I probably didn't get as much enjoyment out of it.
The Michael Wong-ness that isn't here is the fact that he barely speaks English.
It's
a lot of Cantonese for the man. So well done.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, it isn't a refined humor. I mean, there's some fish out of water gags that becomes amusing because I like the performer energy and the energy surrounding Michael. So for instance, him walking into the wrong toilet because the lady's sign looks like someone with a coat on in his estimation, and he has a coat on, so this is the toilet I'm gonna go into, and waka waka. And it also must be sweet as an actor to do takes and takes of eating chips and eating food all the time, because that's how the genie regains his energy in a movie, by just munching down on crap food. It doesn't look like Hollywood type of shooting with food where they have a spit bucket by the side. It just looks like nom, 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 nom.
It's just scoffing, exactly, yeah. That is great. I get paid and I get to scoff a load of food.
I mean, he was in good shape anyway, so he could allow himself to indulge for this movie
shoot.
Yeah,
he was at the pinnacle, probably. Well, he's shirtless most of the time, so people that enjoy Michael Wong shirtless, they're going to enjoy this film.
Any fun with the expected gags of the greedy wanting to exploit the wishes, especially Jordan Chan, as he wishes for a big dick, and that obviously doesn't work out very well.
Oh, well, and that's what I mean. There are moments in this film that are really good, and I really enjoyed that scene, because what you expect is, and you're waiting for basically Jordan to have a massive schlong pop out and stuff, but you don't get that, and I'm not going to ruin the gag. I mean, you might want to ruin the gag, but I'm not going to ruin it because it's great and I love it. It's clever and it's funny, and it's like, you know, it's a laugh out loud moment, which you get, which is what you want from a film like this, and that is one of the moments for me when I did literally laugh out loud.
It's a very funny sight gag too, and yeah. And yes, it doesn't involve a huge snake of a schlong or anything, because even if you are specific with your wish, then you might screw up. And indeed, when Jordan says that, I want the dick that touches the ground, that doesn't work. So that we'll save that reveal, I suppose. But being in sync sound as well, it's very enjoyable to hear these.
Yes.
Hear these reactions. And Michael is not this devious genie. He does as told. And that's what the wish was. That's what you get. The fact that the wish that he ultimately gets she requests to be directed towards Jordan, that he's going to be the kindest, he's going to be a good guy now, I think is the leap-off point to Jordan Chan stealing the movie and Wong Jing's writing being at its strongest, because this it always seems to be a new variation of the gag that he's kind to everyone, he's going to say yes to everything, he's going to help out, and it's going to land him in peril too. Which the genius says, I don't think he's going to survive. He's too kind. And I was wondering what you thought of that, because if you think of it now that you've seen it twice, it's not the same gag in terms of Jordan being kind. They get some mileage out of that.
Oh, God, he gets massive mileage out of it. I mean, you know, you can see what's going to come and you get the obvious, you know, the kind of the mugger. Oh, it's just too nice. I mean, you're like, oh, okay. But actually, it's more than that going forward and stuff. There's so many moments, you know, you get Jordan, like, crying on the sofa and stuff because he's, you know, watching, you know, a film and this and that. There's so much mileage in it. It's brilliant because all of a sudden he switched this character from one extreme to another, which is really clever, and really clever from an acting point of view to do that as well. And like I say, you get mileage. You certainly get mileage out of his character being that overly compassionate and kind person, which is great.
And he is, by being so in tune, he also dispenses some actual good advice rather than taking on too much tasks and being too kind all of the time. Like, take care of my baby, absolutely. And he attempts to breastfeed a baby, for heaven's sake, because he's so kind, he might as well try.
Yeah, he's too kind, he's just too kind. Yeah, like I say, with giving a character that kind of scope, all of a sudden, you know, it's out. You can do anything you want because you've made him the kindest person in the world. Like, it made him the worst person in the world. Again, the scope in that is just massive. And he uses that, and he uses that character and uses that scope, which is great, obviously. And it's a nice foil for the three of them central characters, you know, Anita, Michael, and Jordan, and that's the difference. And like I say, that's why he steals the show, really.
And it is the more interesting parts of the movie, that the whole thing about Anita Yuen falling for Jeannie, and then there's a rivalry with her sister or half sister. I mean, it's a complicated family. Her father, played by Wu Feng, has 8 or 9 wives, but only 2 kids, and they weren't aware of each other. So it's one of those movies that his father is on the move and making moves left and right. So that's part of the movie where she falls for Virginia. Christy Chung does as well. It's structurally fine. It's there. It's a sort of leap-off point for a variety of gags, some of which for me are very hysterical, like when they listen in on Michael's date, a poolside date with Christy Chung, because Jeannie is not the smooth operator romance-wise, so he needs a little bit of a coaching through, and the pearls act as sort of radio mics, I suppose, as well. Yeah, so they can speak into the pearls, and Michael will hear their directions. It's kind of Serrano de Bergerac, I suppose, type of gags. But I love a little gag within this specifically, that it seems like for a little bit that Jordan's old character is re-emerging. I don't know if you remember this bit, but he says to them as they're listening in, what do I do? What am I going to do? And Jordan sort of struggles with Anita and then yells into the so-called microphone, do her, stupid! you got to do her now! So it's either that he's so kind that this is the only thing you should do at this point, you're clearly infatuated with each other, or his old sort of horny self is coming out. Do her, stupid. Those are good things, and that gets us neatly to the end. It's not a movie to be analyzed that deeply, but the reviewing, I think, revealed that Michael isn't dominating the movie or running away with it. Jordan is, but I think it's hard to dislike, for me, the fact that he plays a genie. He's part of this scenario, and he's game to look silly, and that might not make it a classic performance, but it sure as heck, for me, is delightful to see him part of this and not be that precious about his image. I was like, I'm Stone Wong, I don't do these things.
I mean, from that point of view, I do give kudos for him doing that and you know, taking the mick out of him. And it was, I'm sure Wong Jin said, "Well, I've got this movie and I want you to play this genie," and you just, you
I'll
know,
take
walk
it.
around. I'll take it. I'll do that. And fair play to him. He does, you know, and I'll give him credit for that. It's one of those where, for me, you know, anybody could have played that. It doesn't bring anything or the Michael Wongness, but it's just silly enough to work from that point of view. Jordan steals it absolutely 100%. There's a nice a story goes. There isn't really one. It's flimsy at best and stuff, but it carries itself quite well, and it wraps it up quite nicely at the end, I thought. From an ending point of view to a film, I quite enjoyed that. It was quite nice. So from that point of view, it worked. And like I say, a very rare do I do that. Certainly when I'm reviewing films, but for this, viewing it twice was the right thing to do on this film. And again, in the right frame of mind for a movie can look different in a different light, and it certainly did this time around. So yeah, I give kudos to Michael for putting himself out there in this film.
Any other notes you want to mention, or because I'm done and I was satisfied.
No, I'm done. I saw it twice. I couldn't make. I did first time around notes and kind of dismissed them to a certain extent on the second viewing
I
because, you
must
know,
like it.
I kind of,
Ken won't will
yeah,
hate
I
me if I
enjoyed
don't
it.
like
I
it.
enjoyed it exactly. I thought, oh, we're gonna have a ding dong on this one, but we didn't because I came to love it to a certain extent. I'm still a huge Michael Wong fan now. If we'd seen it earlier in the series that we did, you know, it would have been possibly different. But you know, for a film and what it is, Wong Jun brings it. I enjoyed it.
And as for availability of whatever you want, the Hong Kong DVD release is mainly available secondhand, and I saw one eBay seller wanted about $30 plus shipping, which, if the shipping is at, you know, 25, or if the sh shipping is a reasonable rate, then I think it's worth it because I'm a fan of it. But make a decision personally in terms of if it's worth it or not, because it is a bare bonus Hong Kong DVD, of course. It's not on digital, either Amazon or iTunes. It's not, they don't always focus on the full lineup of those Cosmopolitan movies. You have the Stephen Chow ones from that time, as I explained, you know, Justice My Foot, Love and Delivery, Mad Monk, Out of the Dark. But those are the Stephen Chow ones that has a greater chance to be sold digitally as part of the Shaw Brothers lineup. Whatever You Want didn't make that cut, as they went to iTunes and Prime, and that's, I can understand it, because there isn't that much there. But you would hope that everything that came on disc would get a place digitally, but there we are. So currently, standard definition, try and get it for a reasonable price, and let us know how it goes. That's us. We are officially done, and I don't really have anything else to say. The bonus episodes are kind of our way of doing swift episodes and rewarding you who stuck with us and maybe thought, like, what about Whatever You Want? Why didn't that make the coverage? Blah, 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 blah. Well, it did, sort of. We've talked of it, but it wasn't part of the official tally. And that's it. So I'm going to leave it to Phil if he wants to share some closing thoughts or not. So the floor is yours, buddy.
Yeah, oh, bless. Michael Wong, we love you for your Michael Wongness, and thank you. This series has been great. I loved it. I just want to quickly, for no apparent reason, just want to get it out there, and it's out there on the World Wide Web. It's just send a big, massive hug out to the world in reference to losing Maxwell Posse this week, who was someone I met through the Fighting Spirit Film Festival. He did a film and brought a film called The Chase Sequence, and I interviewed him. My interview is on my YouTube channel. Such a bright spark and a character, and he's gone far too soon. We lost him this week, which is such a shame. He was in I Am Vengeance, Retaliation with for Ross Boyask, a talent, and someone that I called a friend. And I just want to put it out there. So, just as a memory, to say, yeah, he was a talent that left us, and a light that went out too soon. So thank you. Yeah.
Well said, buddy. And we are gonna sign off for this episode. Thank you, everybody, for sticking with us. And we might return to other Michael Wong movies in the past, serious movies or not so serious movies, because he had a place in dramatic award-winning fare, as you all know, but also like to be a goofball in movies, as you also know, based off a genie here and movies like I'm Your Birthday Cake. So we'll see what happens in the future. But the Wong-a-Wrong of it all is officially over, and the unofficial bonus content is over and done with as well. So I've been Kenny B, enjoyed this journey with you. Let's find another actor, Phil. What about Dean Sheck? No, that would be too great of a project, I think, Dean Sheck, but who knows. But we are done. I've been Kenny B, and with me was Phil G. So take us out, buddy.
Yeah, be well, stay safe, stay fresh.